Welcome to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
What time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into Tuesday's action, 800-224-2004. Call on the show, tell us what you like, tell us what you hate. Let's be real, you love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show, and we want to hear from you, the listener. So make sure you call in, 800-224-2004, at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at Sports Map Radio. Make sure that you give us a follow. Make sure you also download the podcast wherever you may get your podcast listening systems, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, and of course, wherever else you call a podcast home. And also download the Sports Map Radio app. Carry us in your pocket throughout the day so you don't miss a second of our local great programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun 3 hours that are just going to breeze on by, as they always seem to do. The national championship, where else are we going to start besides there? Georgia now joins an elite crew as one of the only few back-to-back national champions. Is it the start of a dynasty? TCU disappoints in stellar fashion, but did they belong in the college football playoff altogether? And of course, it is Tuesday, which means it is Trivia Tuesday. That coming up in about 25 minutes, but let's not waste any time. For all of you who are new to the show, all of you who have been local listeners, remember, we did switch our clocks, so we are no longer doing a quick three and out second. Nope, we are going right into it. And where else do we begin but the likes of La La Land? A 65-7 win for the Georgia Bulldogs, who become the seventh team in the local college football era, not college football playoff era, just college football era, to make it as a back-to-back champion. And this is a game that a lot of people are going to talk about for quite some time. This is a game that a lot of people are going to go ahead and negate because of the outcome. But let's be real. This is just a different team. This is just a different roster. And this is simply just a different style of football that we are not accustomed to seeing. And we can go ahead and throw out there that the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world and even the Michigans and Ohio States, they're able to recruit. They're able to get to this level. They're able to get to the big dance. But to actually, fully, completely make a 180 turnaround and go from losing all of this NFL talent, losing all of these superstar players, and come back a year later, hoist up yet another national title, you don't see that happen. You never see that happen. And that's exactly where we begin today. 65-7 win for the likes of the Georgia Bulldogs, who become the seventh team all-time in the college football playoff era to be back-to-back national champions. And make no mistake, we called this yesterday. I told you what was the key plan for Georgia if they want to win this game. Plain and simple. Play B-plus football, play their brand, start out fast, and if you do that, you put yourself in a position to win. They did all that, and they did some more. Michael, ladies and gentlemen, you've probably heard this before. Anybody remember when you were growing up and watching television shows late at night, and you'd see that big sign in the corner that goes TVMA, too mature, a little violent? A little bit sexual, a little bit of things that probably the younger eyes don't need to see. Throw that big board right in the corner of your television screen, because that's exactly what you saw last night as Georgia gave the beating of a lifetime to a Big 12 program that did not want to be known as the Cinderella team. But the clock strikes midnight for anybody out there who certainly isn't in the same category as the upper echelons of college football. And they made a statement early. From Stetson Bennett walking it in for a 21-yard touchdown, all the way to him finding Ladd McConkey, Brock Bowers, A.D. Mitchell, Arian Smith, countless other players on this game. That's exactly what you take away from this matchup. That's exactly what you look at. They control the clock. They control the time of possession. They can control the offense. At one point, Georgia was averaging 12.4 yards per play. That was over a first down. We're talking about that was a first down and then some. Didn't matter if they ran it. Didn't matter if they passed it. Didn't matter if they wanted to go ahead and just make short completions that turn into massive gains. That was the storyline of the afternoon. They did everything needed. They did everything that you expected. And then some, all the way until the fourth quarter, where eventually Stetson Bennett walked off the field a champion, was able to go ahead and say, I did this. Our team did this. I think that when you look at this program, especially when you look at this matchup, it's a little bit different than last year. And for good reason. What's the one thing that we said about Georgia all year? What's the one thing that we talked about with Georgia? Well, they're going to have to go ahead and replace talent. Five first-round picks went in last year's draft. Five names heard their presence called to the NFL on day one. 15 total. Multiple players defensively. Went from Quay Walker, from Darion Kendrick, to Jordan Davis, to Trayvon Walker, to countless others that we don't have time to go through, all heard their name. So it's going to be a different team. Definitely not going to be at the same level. Nay. This is the problem that I think a lot of people forget about the NFL. We see highlight players. We see superstars. We see the Coupe de Grace type of names make an immediate impact. And then they go to the next level, and we think immediately they're going to fall off. It's not about talent. It's about productivity, and it's about culture. And that's exactly what Kirby Smart has set in Athens, Georgia, moving forward. It's too early to say that this is a dynasty, but it is not too early to say this is the standard of college football. Seriously, 2014, the college football playoff was born, and we've seen countless teams make it to the playoff. We've seen countless teams hoist up national titles from Georgia to Alabama to Clemson. We've seen this all unfold. We've watched it happen all in front of our very eyes, but we have never seen this happen, where a team can lose as much talent as possible and hardly regress. In his last 34 games, Kirby Smart is 33-1. The one loss, coming to Alabama, and he got his retribution just a few weeks later in Indianapolis, Indiana. Want to go ahead and say, oh, this is only the beginning. I have to go out there and recruit. I have to go out there and get ready for next season. I have to go out there and reset the standard, because that's what it is. That's exactly what you're looking for. And in every facet they did. It didn't matter if it was Stetson Bennett, who finished with an average of 12.2 yards per throw, four touchdown passes, and a QBR rating of 95.5. Didn't matter if it was Kenny McIntosh, Branson Robinson, Savon Clark, Kendall Milton, all of which averaged at least 6 yards per play, and they had three rushing touchdowns total. As a unit, the team was able to score five touchdowns on the ground, 5.8 yards per play. They won the time of possession. They won the turnover battle. They played their style of football for four quarters. And at the end of the day, that's what you saw. That's exactly what you saw. This is now a program that belongs in a category along with Alabama, at least moving forward. And it should. A lot of people out there want to say, well, why would you put them in the same category as Alabama? Look at what Alabama's done. You're right. Look at what Alabama has done. They're the pinnacle of college football. But Georgia's right behind them. Take this, for example. Nick Saban came in 2007. Nick Saban joined the likes of the Crimson Tide back in 2007 after a failed experiment with the Miami Dolphins. He struggled his first year. Everyone thinks that immediately Nick Saban walked into Tuscaloosa and just became a winner. Nay. No, he became a winner quickly, but he did not go walk right in. First season, 7-6 record. Next year, 12-2. And ever since then, multiple double-digit win seasons. They've never finished below 10 wins in a regular season. Well, how about Kirby Smart? Kirby Smart in year one lost to Vanderbilt. Kirby Smart in year one lost to Georgia Tech. And Kirby Smart in year one, well, he went 8-5. Everybody said immediately, oh no, we just fired Mark Richt to bring in Mark Richt 2.0. Countless retweets last night from Freezing Cold Takes. Had to go out and make a statement. Well, ever since then, he's gone 13-2, 11-3, 12-2, 8-2 due to a COVID year. That would have been 10-2 or 11-2. 14-1, 15-0 for a record of 81-15. The guy has done it the exact same way. And sometimes we always want to go ahead and compare the master to the protege. This is one of those compliments that actually bodes well in favor of the protege. Not only has Kirby Smart been able to establish a culture, but he's been able to take the little things, the little tidbits, things that Nick Saban does, like running practices with the defensive backs, being fully involved in the offense, making sure that when he's working on the recruiting trail, he's selling the program, but he's selling the culture of the program, not the actual program itself. Georgia doesn't need any selling. You ever been to Athens? It's a gorgeous campus. It's one of the nicest places that you will ever find in the SEC, and it's in the heartland of the southern region that just pumps out first-round talent left and right. It's all about culture. And the culture that you see that Nick Saban has established in Tuscaloosa is the exact same one that Kirby Smart has established in Athens, Georgia. It's impressive. It's counter-excessive. It's so dynamically different than anything else you've seen out there simply because it is. There's very few coaches who can do exactly what Nick Saban and Kirby Smart have done, and yet here we are looking at them, and you can't be any shocked. You can't. Because if not only could you say, well, you know, it's good to see that Georgia just continues to be at the highest level, but they're not at the highest level. They're at a level of their own, a top level, a level to where this is sustainable. And one that you know is sustainable, they're the next program to watch for. Do I think that they're a dynasty? No, I absolutely don't. Do I think that the conversation now can start? Absolutely. And it should. Because if everyone out there wants to go ahead and say, we want Bama, we want Bama, do you? Because the Bama team that I saw for most of the year was good. Wasn't elite by any means, but it was a good Bama team. This is an elite team. And this is an elite team, and it's been an elite team for the last 3 years, failing to make the college football playoff in 2020. But still, every other year since, been in the conversation, been around the block. Three national title appearances, countless SEC East title appearances, two conference titles, two national champions, first round talent easily going in and out of the door, making it look like a nothing kind of burger. And then you leave the night, the final night of college football, in the hands of a 65-7 victory. Kirby Smart postgame said multiple times how this team was different, but this team never gave up and it never lost its quit. Well, that's the standard moving forward in Athens, Georgia, and that's the standard for the Bulldogs. You got to go ahead and tip your cap. Whether or not you are a Bulldogs fan, you knew who belonged and who was there. Coming up next, TCU. Did they belong in the college football playoff? We'll talk about it right here on Just Saying It.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Did TCU even belong? 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson, Just Saying It, right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. And naturally, everyone in their first intuition is going to go about the future of TCU and this matchup in the national championship. 65-7 win. Number one Georgia takes down number three TCU. And outside of an early touchdown from Max Duggan, I think it was on, if I'm not mistaken, an 8-yard scramble, this was a one possession game. Literally, a bloodbath, no matter how you want to put it. Throw the TVMA sign up there. Go ahead and call it an absolute desolation, an implosion, an absolute dominant performance. But now the question goes to, does TCU belong in the college football playoff? Did TCU belong in the national championship? And it's great. I understand exactly what people are saying right now. Because if you want to know why, you don't pay attention to the game. You don't understand college football to its finest. And you certainly don't understand what it means to belong in the college football playoff. Don't worry. There's a lot of people out there. And I'm not blaming just one specific person who's going to call out TCU and saying, oh, they didn't belong there. Look at what happened when they faced off against a real team. Look at what happened when they faced off against the Dogs. When they faced off against the SEC. When they faced off against the teams who actually play compelling football. Football! Yeah, stop. Stop. Folks, there is a difference between losing to a great program and not being a great program. TCU is a great program, without question. TCU, last season, finished 5-7 underneath longtime head coach Gary Patterson. No offensive identity, and the defense, which was a staple of his background for 2+ decades, started to diminish. Anybody remember TCU a few years back when the college football playoff started? When the college football playoff was at its finest? They almost made the cut. They finished number 5 in the country that year, barely missing out. And eventually they made it all the way up to number 3 because of the losses. Next year, they finished number 7. Well, afterwards, they started to have a little bit of a decline after 2017. 7-6, 5-7, and then they finished 6-4 before going 3-5, going 5-7 the next year. They had 4 straight diminishing seasons. Nothing was working for TCU. So they go ahead and they make a call right across town and hire Sonny Dykes from SMU. Sonny Dykes comes flying in to Amon G. Carter Stadium on a helicopter, and multiple players said, I don't want to buy into this guy. I don't want to buy into what he's selling me. I just worked with a really good coach. I just worked with a name that is synonymous with Fort Worth, Texas. A name of a coach who has a statue less than a quarter mile away from the stadium, exonerating what he has done for our program. Not only that, they weren't able to recruit. TCU, for the next 4 years, between 2017 and 2020, never finished with a recruiting class inside the top 30. They finished 32nd, 36th, 39th, and 45th. And then last season, in the first year of the Sonny Dykes era, they finished 45th, according to 24/7 Sports on the recruiting trail. They had zero five-stars walk into the building. They had 10 three-stars walk into the building. They had 4 four-stars walk into the building. Not to mention Wushon Mathis, one of the top defensive linemen. Well, he left the team to go ahead and head over to Nebraska. And you also had Zach Evans, one of the more premier running backs and highlight playmakers due to his speed and agility, walk across and join the SEC with Ole Miss. And yet here they are, finding a way to win, finding a way to stay true, finding a way to go ahead and build a brand new culture with brand new defense, brand new offensive concept, and make it to the college football playoff. TCU belonged in the college football playoff. And I don't want to hear what you have to say, because if you are a true college football aficionado, what you look at is a 12-game schedule. You look at every single game up and down the board. You say, this game's important, this game's important, this game's important, because you know why? Every single one is. If there wasn't an important game in college football, Alabama versus Georgia would be a staple in the national championship. You want to know why? Because they recruit at the highest level. They produce the NFL talent. They are able to contain some sustainability. And they also win every single accolade in the offseason. Transfers love coming into Tuscaloosa. Transfers love heading to Athens, Georgia. Transfers love going to Columbus, Ohio, and they also love going to Ann Arbor, Michigan. But it's not about what you do in the offseason. It's about what you do in the regular season. And it's why we put an emphasis on every single game counting. If you are a true college football fan, if you absolutely eat, breathe, live, and die by the sport, you would know that every game is crucial. You cannot afford to drop any single game. And the main reason why? Because when you look at the games that you do drop, they end up hurting you and they end up maybe costing you a shot for immortality. They do. Alabama lost 2 games this year. Alabama lost to Tennessee on a last-second field goal. They lost to JT Daniels and LSU on the road in Baton Rouge. They lost by a combined total of 4 points, both on the last play of the game. They have 2 losses. TCU had 1. In the eyes of the College Football Playoff Committee and in the eyes of those who truly care about the sport, the 1 loss in a game, Big 12 title, where Max Duggan, the kid who was benched for Chandler Morris at the start of the year, the kid who had earned the job under Gary Patterson, stayed, fought, was true to his word, put a performance of the lifetime on the map, and made himself a clear-cut favorite to at least finish 2nd in the Heisman voting. Did everything asked of him throughout the regular season. Led his team to 5-5, the most in college football, the most in college football ranked wins. They fought back. They were able to go toe-to-toe with Oklahoma State, Kansas State, Texas, whoever else you want to throw into the category, and they made it look easy. They made it look easy because they had the grit, the intensity, and the tenacity to be able to fight forward. And if you want to go ahead and say that TCU doesn't belong, well, then I ask you, I implore you, did Michigan belong in the college football playoff? Because Michigan all last week, all we heard, gonna beat TCU, gonna get rid of TCU. Don't know what a Horned Frog is, definitely don't know where the Horned Frogs play. What conference are they? The Mountain West? The Conference USA? Is that where they're from? Well, the team that goes to the Big Ten, the 2nd best conference in college football, according to every aficionado out there, got their asses handed to them in the first half. They undervalued TCU for the entire first 30 minutes. And when TCU was able to capitalize on a Philly special, they made them pay. They controlled the time of the clock. They controlled the possession. They were able to establish their dominance against a team known for its slogan, "Hail to the victors." The only victory that you see right now in Ann Arbor is the fact that maybe Jim Harbaugh's coming back in 2023. That's the only victory that I can see coming from the likes of the Maize and Blue. I see a national championship appearance next to TCU's name. Something that hasn't happened in the Big 12 in the history of the college football playoff. We want to talk about big brands. We want to talk about why it's great to have an established culture. Oklahoma and Texas bring in over $48 million per year in revenue to their institutions just based off football, and they have yet to win a playoff game. They've yet to even make it to the national championship. Meanwhile, little old TCU, an institution that features 10,000 undergrad students, an institution that has been blacklisted, an institution that has been thrown to the haymakers and is known as the Little Brothers of the Big 12. First team in the state of Texas. This includes Texas A&M. This includes Baylor. This includes Texas. This includes every other team that you can imagine. Makes it to the college football playoff first. This is an institution that in the conference that people undermine and still belittle to this day because they don't have the right talent, was able to make it to the national title before anybody else. And this was the team that was able to get a college football playoff win, the first of its conference. And you want to tell me that they don't belong? If we're going to go ahead and say that TCU does not belong, you might as well throw out every single regular season game and just hand out the college football playoffs to those who win in the recruiting trail. That's what you should do. And then every single year, you know who it's going to be. It's Alabama. It's Georgia. It's Ohio State. Insert fourth team here. Some years it's going to be Notre Dame. Oh, yeah, we've already seen what Notre Dame can do in the playoffs. Some years it's going to be USC. Hi, Lincoln Riley. What have you done when you made it to the Final Four? Some years it's going to be a surprise team. And Oregon, maybe you could throw in a Penn State. Potentially you'll throw in a Michigan here or there. It doesn't matter. Folks, the games are decided on the field, not in the offseason. And the one thing that we could take away from this performance, the one thing that we could take away from TCU, they were battle-tested, they were proven, they showed the world their grit and tenacity every single Saturday, fighting back from 14 points down and holding leads late in the fourth quarter. If you want to sell me on them not belonging in the college football playoff, you have a better shot of selling me that every single year we should just go ahead and give the SEC a title. And naturally, we're going to talk about the SEC and their dominance soon, but don't for one second say if you are a true college football aficionado, if you care about the sanctity of the sport, if you love the fact that we get to have these type of matchups, that we get to see the underdogs, the Notre Dames, the Cincinnatis, the TCUs, the programs that are vastly underappreciated and thrown to the hayside because of their conference, because of their standings, because of the recruits that they bring in. You're not a college football fan. You like watching dominance. And you can find that on Sundays when you pay for the players versus what you have in the likes of TCU. Yes, TCU belonged in the college football playoff. Yes, TCU got butt whooped by Georgia. But sometimes a great team just loses to a better one. And that's what you saw at SoFi Field on Monday night.
This is Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
He sits on his throne, toying with my emotions, playing with my heart, and pestering me into making mistake after mistake. If you know the music, you know what time it is. Trivia Tuesday right here on Just Saying It, part of the Sports Map Radio Network. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at Sports Map Radio. The game is simple. The questions are hard. And my brain is always befuddled. 10 questions discussing whatever the topic is today. And we close out our college football season coverage. Not really. We're still going to do things from here to there over the next couple weeks. But get the idea. We're going to close it out with one more college football trivia quiz. Michael, let's not waste any time. Question number one.
Hosting the college bowl game was no bowl of cherries. As the state of Michigan found out, when its Cherry Bowl game lasted only two installments, which school beat Michigan State 10-6 to claim the first Cherry Bowl in 1984?
The Cherry Bowl?
Cherry Bowl.
Okay. Do I have multiple choice or no?
It has... I can give them to you real quick.
I say, give me multiple choice, because this one's tough.
Illinois, Syracuse, Brigham Young.
Okay.
And Army.
Okay. And they played who? Michigan State?
They played Michigan State.
Okay, so it wouldn't be Illinois, because that's Big Ten versus Big Ten. So that's out. I think Syracuse at one point was in the Big East, and I don't think that counts. So it's Army or BYU is where I'm thinking. I'm going to go with my gut. You said the final score was what, 10-6?
10-6.
Yeah, that's an Army score. That's 100% Army score. Army does not get more than like 13 points. Army, final answer.
And that's why I'm like giving you multiple choice.
Because of what? I figure it out like in 10 exactly. seconds? Oh, okay, fine. No more multiple choice, Michael. No more multiple choice.
You're too good at multiple choice.
Yeah, because of I'm smart. I know that you want to make this almost impossible and make me look like a fool, but come on.
Question number two. The Gator Bowl took place for the first time in Jacksonville, Florida in 1946. Which bowl first was created in this game in December 1955?
Which bowl first was created in this game in 1955? Okay. So there's three things that I'm thinking of. Number one, this was the very first game where overtime was installed. Because I think back then, they just played a certain number of minutes, and then whatever happened, that was the final score, and they would end in ties, so they finally got rid of the ties. This may have been the first nationally televised game, or it may have been the first to where I think, if I remember correctly, it's the first game with an ejection, like from a player. I'm going to go in my gut here. Something is telling me that it was the first overtime game in a bowl season. So Gator Bowl, 1955, first overtime game, final answer. Well, that sucks. What was it?
First televised.
Great. Why listen to your intuition, people? Why? Sometimes the answer is staring you right in the face and Michael Hernandez smiling back at you, just making you feel so inferior because I said it. All right. Thanks, Michael. No multiple choice on that one.
Question number three.
Oh, yeah, sure. Question number three. Let's see how this one goes.
Many college football programs were suspended or had restricted travel during World War II. The 1945 game was played under a 1945 game was played under what circumstances?
I already know this one because we did this one before, so you're going to have to give me another one. But I know it's the team from Mexico, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So just give me a half point for that one. We'll get another one in quick.
Question number four. Yeah, question number four.
3.5, whatever it is. Yeah.
Auburn's first bowl game appearance came in this 1937 matchup against Villanova, resulting in a 7-7 tie. What scrumptious spirit was the name of the bowl game?
What scrumptious spirit? Oh, so you're saying that it's like an alcoholic drink.
Maybe, maybe not.
Well, it's spirit, so spirit's alcohol. Come on!
Or your own spirit.
Okay, Ghost of Christmas Future. I don't want to talk to you right now. 1937. This feels like a trap. This feels like a trap somewhere. Is it a brand... Can I ask one question? Is it a brand name, or is it like the Whiskey Bowl or something like that?
I mean, it's not a whiskey.
No. But is it a brand name, like the Jack Daniels Bowl? Or like, is it like the...
Oh, like the name of the product?
Yeah, the name of the product.
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I'm wondering. It wasn't Captain Morgan. It wasn't Kettle One. I don't think it was Jack Daniels. Why do I keep going back to that? Was it the Bacardi Bowl? Boom. Back on track. Back ready to kill it.
Played in Havana, Cuba.
It was played in Cuba?
It was.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I did not. Can you imagine the travel restrictions back then? Like to fly from Auburn, Alabama to Havana, Cuba? Can you imagine that travel? Like planes nowadays would take like 4 hours, like would take 4 hours to go across the country. They used to take like 18 hours. Imagine that. Hey, we got to refuel in Mexico and then take back off and do it that way.
Crazy. Question number five. In what city was the now defunct Freedom Bowl played?
The Freedom Bowl. Okay. This feels like it's... It feels like it's one of two cities. It feels like it's either D.C. or it feels like it's Philadelphia. Because of Freedom, I'm thinking of 1776. America. Thinking of America. Thinking about where our country was born. All right, screw it. I'm going to go with my gut. D.C. Final answer. Why would it be?
Good guess.
Why would it be?
Wrong coast.
It wasn't even on the East Coast.
Anaheim, California.
Because that's where freedom was founded. Sure, I know that we were looking for gold, but I didn't know we were looking for freedom out in the Californias.
Question number six.
Oh, great. Question number six. Is that one with freedom? We going out west?
And 2007, an Oregon running back racked up an impressive 253 running yards in the Sun Bowl. Who was his productive player?
You said 2007.
Seven, Oregon.
Oregon.
Running back.
Oh, this is easy. It's Jonathan Stewart. Yeah, it's Jonathan Stewart. I remember this game. I think it was against... it wasn't against Michigan. I think it was against Michigan State. He went off. Like, and then he ended up having like a really good NFL career with the Carolina Panthers and the New York Giants. But Jonathan Stewart?
Jonathan Stewart.
Boom. 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 Boom.
Question number seven. This bowl was played annually from 1982 to 2000, generally on Christmas Day. It was disbanded because of its sponsor's merger with Daimler Chrysler.
Daimler Chrysler. Okay. Christmas Day?
Christmas Day.
Okay. I know this one, and the reason I do is because if there's another bowl that's played on Christmas Eve usually, it's the Aloha Bowl. And the reason it's the Aloha Bowl is because the Hawaii Bowl is played usually on the 23rd or on the 24th. So there was always a game in Hawaii that year. Aloha Bowl. I'm moving and grooving. You ain't getting me a day. I'm going to hit my 7 mark. I got what? 2.5 more? 3.5 more?
You have 4.5 right now.
Great.
Question number 8.
Yeah, I got 3 more. Let's go.
What kind hearted bowl game was played twice? Once in 1961 and again 10 years later in 71.
1961 and what was the other one?
And 1971.
Kind-hearted bowl game?
Yes.
I have no idea. You know what? Let's go with a fun one. The Care Bear Bowl. Because let's be real, the Care Bears always cared about you, and they were kind-hearted people. What did it end up actually being? Because I had no idea.
The Mercy Bowl.
That's just mean. That's just so mean. No, please don't hit me. Please, no. I just wanted to be over. Oh, God, I don't need it anymore. Stop it!
Question number 9.
You ever see the meme of the Simpsons character getting his butt whooped and then he goes, stop it, he's already
dead!
Yeah.
That was the Mercy Bowl. That was TCU in Georgia today.
Leave me alone.
Question number 9. Who was the MVP of the 2003 Orange Bowl?
This is good. If you tell me who played it, I'm going to get it, right?
Yes.
Orange Bowl. Oh, I remember this one. This was his last game, and then he got drafted, and he was the Heisman Trophy winner. It was Carson Palmer. Final answer. And it was against Iowa?
Yes.
All right, cool.
Question number 10. The Oil Bowl is another short-lived New Year's Day game played in Houston in 1946 and 47. Two teams from what state were responsible for winning both Oil Bowl contests?
Two teams from the same state.
From what state?
Are they? And they're from the same state, though. Like, the two teams that won it are from the same state.
Yes.
Okay. I think Oklahoma. So what I end up finishing with?
5, and it was Georgia.
I finished with 5.5 out of
10. 5.5.
Come on. Oh, come on. Trivia Tuesday, right here on Just Saying It. Once again, Michael Hernandez 1, Cole Thompson nothing.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
He earned it. He absolutely earned it. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. At Sports Map Radio. It is Just Saying It with Sports Map Radio. With Cole Thompson right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Make sure you download the podcast wherever you get your podcast listening systems. Make sure that you also download the Sports Map Radio app. Carry us in your pocket throughout the day so you don't miss a second of our great local programming. Let's just go back to last season. Let's just go back and look at Stetson Bennett last year. Last year, Stetson Bennett walked off Lucas Oil Stadium. He walked off the field feeling high and mighty. The red and black fell down on his shoulders, cascading him in confetti, making him feel like he was on top of the world. And that program that Georgia Bulldogs program, the one that had not won a national title since 1980, 41 years in the making, told him thank you. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Stetson. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you for what you've done. Stetson Bennett, you belong in the history books for the likes of good old Georgia football. Get the hell out of here. Start selling insurance and start getting ready to make your deals in Mercedes-Benz. That's exactly what you want to see, right? Well, no, that's not what Stetson Bennett did. See, Stetson Bennett understood what it meant to be a Georgia Bulldog. A lot of people out there want to talk about the fandom of college football. And it may only come with the likes of the superstars who go line up at 6 in the morning, go ahead and set up your tailgate tents, camp out the night before, and go get your tickets. You think those are the college football fans? You think those are the superstars, the can't-miss, the blue bloods, the diehards? You know that players are also diehards. Anybody can grow up rooting for anybody. I can tell you right now, I grew up in a household where my mom went to Rutgers, my dad went to Indiana, my grandfather was a huge Notre Dame fan, and I would spend my Saturdays on the couch at my grandfather's house watching the program from South Bend, Indiana, always disappoint. And I grew up a Notre Dame fan. I went to Alabama, but I grew up a Notre Dame fan, and there will always be a little heart place in my heart to where I will always say, the Fighting Irish, I want to root for them. I want to see them have a shot, because I was a fan. Stetson Bennett was a Georgia Bulldog fan. He grew up about 2.5 hours southwest of Athens, Georgia, but he would make trips. He and his family would go visit Sanford Stadium. They'd go ahead and cascade themselves through Athens, Georgia. They want to go ahead and be a part of the culture, and he had an opportunity and multiple opportunities to go play college football elsewhere. He had multiple offers from lower tier FBS programs, countless offers from Division II schools, several from the FCS level, but he wanted to be a Bulldog. He wanted to be a Georgia Bulldog because he was a fan. He was exactly what you and I are, except he was a little bit more athletic. He had a little bit more skill set, better arm, better accuracy, and a nit and grit for potential. Well, he got told by Kirby Smart at one point, you're not going to play here. Listen, I like you. We can make you an assistant coach. We can make you just be a part of a practice squad. You can be on this staff to help us win national titles. You know, when we face off against Baker Mayfield in the college football playoff, when we go to that game, you can help us there. But you're not going to be our starting quarterback. So what's he do? He transfers. He transfers away, goes to Division II school, tears it the hell up, makes it look easy. And then he gets offers, gets more offers. Still lower tier Power 5 schools, or even more so Group of 5 colleges, where he would have been guaranteed the starting role. But he wanted to earn the right of being a Georgia Bulldog. He wanted to earn the right of actually being a part of this institution, being that guy. Well, he goes back to Georgia, this time on a scholarship, makes himself feel all high and mighty, actually starts a few games due to injury, struggles, is benched for JT Daniels. Daniels, 5-star talent, has all the accolades, looking at what he's been able to do at the likes of USC, definitely was a high school phenom. He wins the starting job for the remainder of the year. Not only that, takes them to a Peach Bowl victory over Cincinnati. Puts himself in the right spot. Makes himself look very high and mighty going into the next season. Oh, Georgia's going to be the favorites to win the Natty. Because who? Because of the good old JT Daniels. Well, JT Daniels gets hurt very early in the season after a win over Clemson, and they give the job back to Stetson Bennett. And what does Stetson Bennett do for the remainder of his time? Well, he goes 29-3 as a starter. He leads his team to a national title last year. And even though the production is definitely down from a year before, still putting up great numbers. Finishes 9th in the country with 3,823 yards, 23 touchdowns against 7 interceptions, the 4th highest QBR rating, and the 8th highest passer rating on the season at 157.3. Not to mention, he also ran in 8 touchdowns, he rushed for 166 yards, and he averaged 3.1 yards per play. Not to mention he was a Heisman Trophy finalist. He also brought more stability to an institution that has been looking for countless accolades for the last 4 decades and is one of only 7 quarterbacks, one of only 7 in the history of college football that can say he is a back-to-back national champion. I am just a simple radio show host. I am a simple guy that loves talking sports, and somehow you people pay to listen to me. It's awesome. It's a great feeling for me. You don't want to hear my opinion on Stetson Bennett. you don't want to hear what I have to say about him. I can go ahead and go on accolades and go on praises and give him countless, more and more awards, more than ever before. But what does my opinion matter? What is my opinion as just a guy who loves college football, studies, eats, lives, and breathes it every single day? What's my opinion on it? You don't really care. Would you care if Aaron Murray said that Georgia Stetson Bennett was the greatest college quarterback or the greatest Georgia quarterback of all time? Would you care about that? The guy who has all the wins, who has all the accolades, who has all the numbers, openly admit, no, he's the greatest Georgia player of all time. How about Matthew Stafford? Matthew Stafford, superstar, five-star talent. Michael, ladies and gentlemen, did you know he was teammates with Clayton Kershaw playing baseball in Dallas? What if he says Stetson Bennett is the greatest Georgia player of all time? What about countless others like Herschel Walker? Or you could throw in Jake Fromm, or you could throw in other names from the 1980s. What if they said Stetson Bennett was the greatest Georgia player of all time? Well, they have, and they mean it. Herschel Walker will go down in history for what he did as a running back, but he was never able to do what Stetson Bennett just did. He was never able to go ahead and beat the odds. He was never able to put himself on the same pinnacle level coming out of high school, having to dictate every single expectation, all these preseason notions and bygones be bygones, be the little man in the building and walk away as the big fish in a great in an even bigger, greater ocean. You don't see that at the likes of Georgia. You don't see that at the likes of Alabama because they just build on their own talent. They're able to find pieces like it's bread and butter. That's what it is to go to these programs. That's what it is to go to these towns. One of the main reasons why I say all the time, you don't have to sell me on Georgia. You don't have to sell me on Alabama. You want to know why? Hey, Michael, you want to go play college football at Alabama? Sign him up. Hey, you want to go play college football at Columbus, Ohio? Sign him up. You don't have to worry about it because they just do it based off name, brand, and recognition. But to be able to go against five stars, four stars, countless names who are currently in the NFL and have their respect, that's why Stetson Bennett is the greatest Georgia player who's ever lived. That's why Stetson Bennett will go down in history as the name to remember in Athens. And it comes from a guy who certainly never met the build, the criteria, the boldness, the strategy, all the simple things that you look for in a college football player. That's why we love the game, because of it defies expectations. It raises the awareness, and it shows that what we have here, what is being built, is sustainable. But even better, we know that any single person can make it if you give yourself the opportunity. Stetson Bennett went from being a walk-on quarterback at an institution that he grew up loving as a kid, getting told, you know what, basically, we're going to use you as a Baker Mayfield clone on the practice squad, and then you're done. And he walks away with a 29-3 record, one of the greatest records you will ever see in college football, SEC or not. He'll walk away as a Heisman finalist. He'll walk away as the national championship MVP, back-to-back national titles, and having the respect and praise of the entire state of Georgia, doing something that not even the finest of the finest could do. Back-to-back national champions. It's why we love the game, and it's why he will go down in history as the greatest Georgia player of all time. You don't see this happen any single day. You don't see it happen in Alabama. You don't see it happen in Columbus, Ohio, or in Southern California, or in Pappy Valley, Pennsylvania. You see it every once in a blue moon, and 9 times out of 10, you don't see it from the guy who ends up making it to Canton. You see it from the guy that makes it to Atlanta. You see it to the guy that is enshrined in the likes of the College Football Hall of Fame, because they're icons that way. The last quarterback to win back-to-back national titles was A.J. McCarron for Alabama. When have you ever heard his name called in the NFL? People all the time want to focus in on why an NFL player and the college football player have to be the same. No, they don't. You can be a legend in one sport and a failure in another, but it takes nothing away from what you do in that moment. And in the brightest stage, on the brightest night, on the biggest performance of his life, Stetson Bennett delivered. He is the greatest Georgia player of all time, and he has cemented his legacy walking off in curtain call fashion as one of the greatest to do it.